The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Century, housing first. People who use drugs face persistent barriers to housing, decent work, health care, and safety. Reintegration and rehabilitation programs are usually tied to abstinence, and they exclude people who aren't yet ready or who don't want to stop using drugs. Yet, evidence shows that inclusion increases options for people to gain control over their lives, and it's the most effective when it's low-threshold, rights-based, and it's built on harm reduction, peer involvement, and practical supports. Cities and nonprofits around the world are demonstrating what this looks like in practice. The European Union Drugs Agency, EUDA for short, held a webinar recently to discuss and explore Housing First and Employment First strategies. On this week's show, we hear presentations by two of the panelists. First, here's Cristiana Merendero, a neuropsychologist and project manager at the Portuguese NGO Crescer.
I will begin with five starting points that guide our work at Crescer. The first one, I would say, that is recognize that people are not unfit. More often is the existing responses that fail to meet their real needs. The second one is a recognition that participation is essential. So developing effective responses begins with the creating spaces where people's voices are heard, are valued, and integrated into project design and implementation. This is fundamental to building responses that truly work for people. Third, peer workers and lived experience are key contributors to this. At Crescer, around 30% of our staff have lived experience. We have peer workers in every project we deliver, and these bring a unique knowledge and strengthens our ability to support people effectively. Fourth, meaningful change happens through trust and clear information. So genuine, consistent, non-judgmental relationships together with honest and useful information create real conditions for people to do safer choices and sustainable changes. And finally, behavior is adaptive. People do the best they can with the resources, the context, the history they have. And substance use may function as a strategy for regulation, survival, and relief. And understanding this allows us to intervene with both humanity and effectiveness. So about the projects I will present today, Crescer has been developing a social enterprise approach since 2019, aimed at promoting the social inclusion of people experiencing homelessness through employment. And since 2013, we have been developing this project called É Uma Casa, Lisboa Housing First, that is focused on people experiencing homelessness and who use drugs. Starting with our social enterprises, we have developed a training and a labor market integration program with two main goals. The first one is to integrate these vulnerable people into society through employment, and the second one is to contribute to Crescer's financial sustainability. In this program, after selecting trainees, Crescer, in partnership with the Lisbon Hotel and Tourism School and also with the Institute for Employment and Vocational Training, provides a one-month theoretical and practical training program, followed by this five-month on-the-job learning period in one of the four spaces currently operated by Crescer, which I will present shortly. After this period, participants continue either with a professional internship or a direct entry into the labor market. Throughout all the process, trainees will also receive psychological and social support. And I just want to highlight here that participants are paid in this training, so as in any other professional training promoted by the Institute for Employment and Vocational Training. And they also receive this diploma from the Institute when they finish this training. As a result, approximately 50% of participants who complete the on-the-job training successfully enter the labor market. So we run 4 restaurants in the city of Lisbon and a catering service. One of them is this that you are seeing in the pictures. So this is a fine dining restaurant in the city center of Lisbon, where participants gain hands-on experience and develop advanced culinary and service skills. This second one, so this is another venue, is used essential for corporate events and group dinners with a capacity for over 120 people. We also run our catering services from this location. And following the same model of our other restaurants, we operate 2 canteens located within large company offices, AGAS, an insurance company, and Coffee D's, a credit company. This project also demonstrates how partnership between community-based organizations like SHIR and private companies can serve as strong examples of involving the whole society in addressing homelessness and promoting social inclusion. I now would like to take just 1 minute to talk about the brand we almost organically, I would say, create with the hotel, a marketing agency. So all our projects follow the naming pattern It's a Something. It started with It's a House, our housing first program, and has grown to include our social enterprises. It's a restaurant, it's a table, it's a lunch. So today the brand spans all our projects. This brand represents more than a name. It reflects the care, the quality, the dignity. And our spaces are thoughtfully designed, welcoming and well decorating, showing that the people we work with deserve the best. By creating these environments, we challenge also negative stereotypes about homelessness, about social services, and we help participants feel valued and recognized for their strengths. So the brand itself tells a story of value, of competence, of social inclusion. The products, such a lunch or a dinner experience, are one way for clients to engage with this story and actively promote social inclusion. And these initiatives have been successfully in involving both the community and also these private companies we work with. And to conclude this part, I will highlight the impact on our trainees using the words of Jonas, which is it's a colleague and a previous trainee from this course, who speaks of fulfillment, recognition, and connection, all of which, as we know, are key drivers for motivation and personal change. So now I will present our Housing First program called É Uma Casa Lisboa Housing First. In line with the original Housing First model, it is based on independent, scattered site, and time unlimited housing, paired with off-site support from a specialized team and community-based services. Housing visits, which are not optional in this project, are the most important setting for intervention in this methodology. It is during these visits, as well as in other community contexts, that new pathways are co-construct with our tenants. In addition, when participants have income, they contribute 30% to the project. In this methodology, participants are the drivers of intervention, setting their own goals, their own housing rules. And so the approach is fully individualized and aims to promote autonomy and self-determination. Our target group consists of people experiencing chronic homelessness, many of whom use substances such as heroin, crack cocaine, benzodiazepines, alcohol. These are individuals living in extreme vulnerability, often with multiple comorbid conditions, including both physical and mental health challenges. Also, many of them carry histories of complex trauma. We do not impose any precondition related with documentation, abstinence, treatment, adherence, or similar requirements. In fact, the most complex and vulnerable cases are the ones that are prioritized. This combination of factors makes traditional services difficult to access or often not adapted to the realities of the public we work with. This is precisely why Housing First is so crucial. It provides stability first, allowing us to work on safety, health, on social integration from this place of trust, continuity and dignity. Since its implementation in February 2013, the project has grown from 7 to 152 houses and now operates in 3 cities in partnership with municipalities and also the Social Security Institute. Over the years, it has supported more than 170 people who had experienced homelessness for an average of 14 years, with women representing roughly 30% of participants. A key outcome is that 90% of people supported have not returned to homelessness, which demonstrates both the effectiveness of Housing First in promoting housing stability and its long-term sustainability. This creates a cascade effect. It impacts not just the individuals, but also the broader community by reducing the number of people living in inhumane conditions on the street, improving individual and public health, reducing substance use and victimization, and promoting, I would say, in the most ecological way possible, social inclusion and community engagement. This experience also allows us to support other Housing First projects, nationally and international, and influence local and national policy. Of course, to continue the project, we need apartments, which rely on the private rental market. And right now, to reduce housing instability, we are developing a capital fund with MAIDS, a Lisbon-based company with expertise in supporting impact-driven organizations to guarantee long-term rent stability. With this, we hope secure the most important tool of this project, that are the houses, but also easing the pressure on our staff, we would say, who are the second most important asset to ensuring this project success and quality. So on the houses, we approach substance use through 3 dynamic stages. The first one, I would say, that is reframe substance use. So we begin with the understanding that substance use is a complex, multifactorial phenomenon deeply embedded in each person's life context. There are many reasons for using: relief, belonging, survival, emotion regulation, pleasure, routine, or even coping with trauma. And reframing means moving away from a simplistic explanation and acknowledging this complexity rather than just reducing this substance use to a problem or to a bad choice. Then we try to understand its multiple meanings. So before intervening, we listen. Our goal is to understand what substance use means in that person's life, the role it plays, and the purpose it serves. We work without moral judgment and without assumptions about intentions, mistakes, failures. So recognizing the meaning behind the pattern of use allows us to see that each person is doing the best they can with the resources, the strategy, the experience that are available to them. And at the end, this third stage is co-create alternative pathways. So change is not imposed, it is built collaboratively. Grounded in a trusting therapeutic relationship, we co-create possible realistic alternatives that align with the person's goals, capacities, and circumstances. These pathways may include harm reduction strategies, stabilization, safer use, managing or reducing consumption, or if the person chooses, working toward abstinence. But our focus is always this: autonomy, dignity, and supporting the ability to make informed choices. So as I come to an end, I want to highlight that we are not just talking about providing a roof here. We are talking about housing and the security, the autonomy, the privacy, the sense of ownership that come with housing.
That was Cristiana Merendero, a neuropsychologist and project manager at the Portuguese NGO Crescer, presenting December 3rd on a panel organized by the European Union Drugs Agency entitled Care Without Conditions, Housing First and Employment First Approaches. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Another speaker on that panel was Lewis Boddy, Senior Development Officer with the Scottish Drugs Forum.
So I'll give you a little bit of history, first of all, just around our project here. It was a small pilot in Glasgow, launched in 2004 in response to barriers of employment faced by people with lived experience of drug and alcohol problems through the work that Scottish Drugs Forum were doing. It was becoming clearer and clearer. People who were able to get into some form of recovery were experiencing still significant barriers with many elements of their life, with a focus around employability and employment too. Recognising that many people in the city were experiencing these unique barriers as a result of their substance use, but also multiple other issues that impacted their employability, like mental, physical health, interactions with the criminal justice system, their education or lack of education, and some of the soft skills that we associate with employability as well. Really, since 2004, the project in essence hasn't changed too much in the terms that is a supported employment experience. However, the scale and criteria around it have, and I'll share more about that later on in the presentation as well. SDF have a really strong track record of funding this project as well. And in 2023, we had our kind of most significant investment via the Scottish Government through the National Drug Mission, which saw the biggest investment to date with the National Traineeship, which allowed an element of unrestricted funding with the project as well. It's an award-winning project and has won multiple awards since 21 years it's been delivered, with most recently this year winning a award through Highland Third Sector Interface, part of the reducing vulnerability category. So why do we need the National Traineeship? Probably a lot of this is sort of preaching to the converted in terms of the reasons why, but it's really as relevant in 2004 as it is in 2025, with Scotland's ongoing public health emergency, with Scotland's drug death figures. There's people who obviously manage to receive support and get into some form of recovery, whatever that recovery means to them. And looking at that opportunity to reintegrate people back into areas of society, especially with employment. And we do that through this model of supported employment. So the introduction of lived and lived experience within the sector may have been seen as quite tokenistic before, but really it isn't now. And a lot of Scotland's workforce within the health and social care sector especially sees the benefit of bringing people from the lived and lived experience community into this kind of sector of work, and the significant contributions people from the lived and lived experience make within services. Big couple of service providers in Scotland, third sector providers like Turning Point Scotland, We Are With You, employ people on a significant basis who have lived and lived experience. So there's a real culture change within Scotland happening around employing people with barriers and specifically with lived and lived experience. There's ongoing challenges within the sector, within recruitment and retainment, and that's part of the reason why this project came around. But really, it's looking to tackle the barriers head on for people, whether that's through trauma, navigating through the justice system, navigating through Scotland's Protection of Vulnerable Groups membership, which is a membership programme that you must be part of to work with vulnerable people, as well as, you know, just ongoing health inequalities, financial inequalities for people who have been affected by drug use over the years. So the traineeship is really unique in terms of combining the quantity of training, the bespoke support, the practical element, and the paid element to the project as well. You know, it directly impacts or challenges poverty alleviation through the traineeship. It addresses inequality through paid employment, through training, through education. The majority of our trainees come from a history of intergenerational unemployment. Many of the trainees that we employ every year come from areas of multiple deprivation. So the traineeship directly addresses this inaccessibility to employment and education and allows an area or element of financial independence, which many of our trainees have never had before. Trainees also show up as real role models within their local community, within their immediate family, within their friends, within their peer groups, too, breaking years of intergenerational unemployment and really tackling that stigma around employing people who have a history of substance use. So what is the traineeship? What is the traineeship? I'll give you a bit of a kind of explanation about what we do here, basically. So it's a paid employment opportunity, and I think I just want to emphasise that. It's the payment is a really important element of this, and we pay people the real living wage, or the most recent real living wage, and they're employed with Scottish Drugs Forum for 9 months. They do 27 and a half hours a week. They work Monday to Friday with us, and over that 9 months, they do a real kind of intensive combination of professional and personal development. They go through a vocational qualification, an SVQ2, which is the entry level qualification within Scotland for working in the health and social care sector. And it's pitched at that level for people just entering the job market and the roles and responsibilities that trainees do whilst they're doing their traineeship with us. They do a practical work-based placement, and that is with a variety of different forward-facing services that we work with across Scotland, primarily drug and alcohol services, but we also work with a range of different services like advocacy, criminal justice, homeless services. So really a range of different kind of practical experiences, so trainees can really cut their teeth in the practical element of this. There is a whole heap of training throughout the time that trainees are on the project with us. They do over 30 pieces of bespoke training, a range of facilitator-led e-learning and knowledge sessions through their vocational learning too. And it's a real kind of bespoke set of training that ranges from professional boundaries to elements of motivational interviewing to looking at trauma, stigma, all the things that are really relevant to make someone work within the drug and alcohol sector in 2025. This is all wrapped around with intensive pastoral support and employability support. So at the end of the 9 months, the trainees come out the other side of it. They've got qualification, they've got the practical work experience, they've got the knowledge, but they've also got the kind of the confidence, the self-belief to be moving into mainstream employment afterwards as well. I'll talk to you a wee bit about our criteria and an element of around how this has changed as well. The traineeship is like applying for like any other job. There's a person specification, there's a job description. Trainees have to go through a fairly, what I would say, rigorous recruitment procedure to get employment with on the traineeship. We've got limited funding spaces, so we really want to make sure that the people applying know what they're applying for and they feel ready for employment. You'll see that kind of strap line at the bottom. That's really the question that we ask people applying. Are you at a stage in your life where you feel ready for employment? And through this, personal experience is really important. We recognise the value lived experience through supporting friends and family has, but the traineeship is specifically for people who have been personally affected by their own personal substance use. So we used to have an old abstinence-focused criteria, and that was used to measure readiness. This demonstrated the opportunity the lived experience brings, but it excluded the living experience and people who are at different stages in their life in terms of their own recovery, whatever that recovery means to them. This excluded people from the job market who were potentially and were able to demonstrate a readiness for work, but were hindered by this time-based criteria. In 2023, we developed and brought in a new criteria, which was part of a real kind of ideological change within Scottish Drugs Forum. And it demonstrated a new approach to supporting people with lived and living experience, but at different stages in their own personal recovery. This was influenced, like I said, through a kind of ideological change, but influenced through consultation with key stakeholders at Scottish Drugs Forum as well. And there was a recognition and a continued recognition that abstinence doesn't always require a time-based approach, that medication-assisted treatment, opioid substitute therapy can be part of encouraging people to work, and it should not be a barrier for entering the workforce. We at SDF believe that people who use drugs or are in receipt of medication-assisted treatment can and should be included. With the right supports in place, the lived and living experience community make a really valued addition to the labour market. We're leading the way in Scotland in terms of championing the rights of people who use drugs, who are in receipt of medication-assisted treatment, to have that same employability access as others if they are in the right place to be doing so. It allows SDF to access more people facing employment barriers through their substance use and can access opportunities that the national traineeship provides through this new criteria that we have. A big part of what we do is the support on the traineeship. And I think I want to just kind of emphasise and stress that this is a supported employment environment and experience that trainees are coming in. So we know that life within a mainstream employment can look very different to when people are in a supported employment experience. So we are equipping and building that capacity for people on the traineeship to ready them for life beyond the traineeship and working within the mainstream mainstream employment. The majority of trainees who do this project move on to work within the health and social care sector. That's what our national traineeship focuses on. And there's a real emphasis around supporting people to be ready going forwards. So in terms of people, when they accept the role before they start, there's usually a couple of months period before then. We do a lot of pre-employment support with people, find out where they're at in terms of their own life, their own family life, their own recovery, things that they need to be putting in place in terms of them being able to fully make the most of the traineeship while they're on it, identifying any support needs that's going to perhaps at this time hinder them and making a success onto the traineeship, exploring that with them and making sure that we can put those kind of mechanisms and supports in place for people. We do a lot of work around supporting the right placements for folk too, and ensuring that the right placement and practical experience is suited for them, but also at the same time pushes people out of their comfort zone. So, for example, if somebody has an experience of their own recovery being quite absence focused, we would look at services that maybe have a harm reduction focus as well to kind of make them aware of gaps in their knowledge that they might not be aware of, and ensure that there's a real holistic approach to when they are developing their practice and their knowledge. They're looking at a kind of holistic approach to how they might support the clients in front of them with the variety of different areas of signposting and services that they could access. During employment, people do a lot of, there's a huge amount of support that our project support team deliver. So from ongoing kind of pastoral support, what we describe it, to formal supervision, it's a peer project. We employ between 30 to 35 people a year. And within that, there's kind of three separate groups and they have their own peer support. And that is really key to the success of this project, the peer element and then being able to support each other, whether that's through their qualification, what's going on at placement, what's going outside of work as well, is really key and one of the kind of main key ingredients to making this project work.
That was Lewis Boddy, Senior Development Officer with the Scottish Drugs Forum, presenting December 3rd on a panel organised by the European Union Drugs Agency entitled Care Without Conditions, Housing First and Employment First Approaches. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for Community Radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support public media and local community radio. Become members. Become volunteers. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.